High culture meets high technology at the bleeding edge of the radical right. Majority Rights Radio.
Hello. I'm speaking to Kievsky and Matt Parrott. This is Soren Renner with Majority Rights Radio. And we're doing a show tonight on the politics of this great nation that we call North America. In particular, the United States part. And I wanted to do this show because of all the things that were happening with the Tea Party and the run-up to the midterm elections, the primaries that we had in so many states on Tuesday of this past week. And I just thought that it was really interesting to talk to Kievsky and Matt Parrott and find out what news stories they had been interested in. And we can all talk and go from there.
Okay, well, what I'm seeing is what happened, I think, demographically is a lot of middle-aged people lost their jobs, got retired out early, and so they have the time on their hands. One thing I've been saying is people work too much to do politics, and now there's people that have time on their hands, and that time, and they can vent their discontentment. So that's what the Tea Party comes from. I always used to say, you know, we will start getting politically active when we're standing around a garbage can fire, warming our hands and, you know, having a roasting squirrel over the garbage can fire.
If you can get the squirrel.
Yeah, right.
You know, in Soviet Union, squirrel roasts you.
Well, maybe, you know, a stir-fried grasshoppers, you know, in a bed of mustard and burdock leaves.
Ah, yes. You know, but, in a day, when times get that bad,
yeah,
you will be glad to get a mollusk and swallow it.
Yeah, well, I've practiced, you know, I eat bugs once in a while just to make sure I'll be able to do it, and grubs.
Entomophagy. Entomophagy.
Entomophagy, yeah. I don't, or entomophagy, I'm not sure how that term goes, but yeah.
Oh, it's, you know, by the way, perhaps, you know, it's possible that some of our listeners aren't even familiar with the various voices that they're hearing. I'm speaking to Kievsky now.
Yeah, I'm Kievsky.
Yes. And I'm Matt Parrott.
All right. And there's another voice that you may hear if it decides to start piping up. It's in the same room with me. It is an actual parrot, and it can be very annoying sometimes. But right now it's being quiet.
Okay, so the Tea Party demographic are people who lost. I mean, I'd be out there protesting.
Well, this is really. This sounds interesting, but wait, back up, Kievsky. First,
yeah.
Either you or Matt, I want a good explanation of what happened in the last month and in the last week that we should all talk about it. Because the reason I decided to do the show, I was stunned to find out that Rubio was now 14 points ahead in Florida when Crist was like ahead like 3 weeks ago. That's what stunned me. But can you give me a thumbnail, you know, what's been happening in the last 3 weeks? Because it seems, you listen to talk radio, everybody thinks there's this huge groundswell, much more than like 3 weeks ago. There's this huge thing happening.
Yeah, well, the Rockefeller Republicans are getting purged. I think it's awesome. You know, they're total scum. A lot of them are...
Okay, Kevsky, you're incapable of giving a thumbnail, even though I answered it. Matt Parrott, can you do that? Can you tell me what's been happening over the last month? Assume this person hasn't been listening to the news. This person is listening to you and trying to figure out what we're talking about. What happened in the last month in the run-up to midterms, and why does it matter?
Honestly, I think Kievsky summarized it pretty well as far as the Rockefeller.
No, not the motivation. Not the motivation. Just what has been happening.
The a few of the key mainstream established Republican candidates have been clobbered by candidates from the Tea Party movement who had previously been considered long shots or impossible candidates, totally unqualified. The media did not see this coming. It surprised the pollsters as well. And it appears that the Tea Party is well on its way to doing more than merely influencing the GOP elite.
A lot more.
But actually... potentially hijacking GOP altogether.
And also, in the primaries this fall, the Republican turnout for the Republican primaries summed over the U.S. was greater, millions, I think 4 million people greater or something like that, than the turnout to the Democratic primaries. And that hasn't happened since 1930.
Well, can you imagine how depressing it would be to be a Democrat right now? To be a liberal, to have elected your savior, and then to have it just sort of be this depressing and miserable?
Yeah, I just have to sort of imagine my life and then imagine that I'm a liberal and I'm still depressed.
Well, I saw it coming because, you know, the poor guy inherited a real economic mess. I have no personal animosity for the 44th president. You know, my animosity is reserved for Bush and for the puppet masters that control the 44th president. But I think the guy himself is just a puppet. And I think, you know, being angry at him is misplaced.
What is that noise?
What, the buzzing?
No, there's a noise.
Like a high-pitched whine?
It sounds like one of you's driving.
Maybe it's a train. Anyway, it might be from here. Okay, so anyway, go on.
Well, that's bad radio. Don't talk about background noise. Edit that out.
No, you cannot. That is bad radio, okay? I've been listening to talk radio, Kiyosaki. Micro-editing is out. What you want is a sort of free flow. You know, these guys get up, you know, people like the Stephanie Miller Show, which is liberal. Just great, though. You know, spent 25 years on the radio. She sits around with a few her friends, and they talk, and, you know, the guy she does her shows with. And it sounds like they're just talking, and they refer to stories about each other, and you never hear all of the stories. So they know all these incidents in common. The point is, people like to hear friends talking.
Okay.
In a relaxed way. Now, of course, we're not friends.
If there's a train in the background and we're nobody near them.
Well,
you need, just shorten your
okay,
take up
no
long
train here now.
Long spaces, Soren.
It's from one of you guys.
Share the mic with the other two, Soren.
Oh, who's being the intellectual bully now?
Okay, so we had a purge of the rhinos. Like, Lisa Murkowski got thrown out in Alaska. Joe Miller took her place.
It's Miller time.
Yeah, right? And Christine O'Donnell took out Mike Castle in Delaware. And, you know, I think that's fantastic. And who cares if, Christine O'Donnell, like, says she's, how did they well, found
he
a got, thing with you against
he got rooked.
He got
rooked.
Yeah.
Castle, well, rooked.
Okay, I get it. Well, anyway, so yeah, that's a really good sign, because if you want to bring the country more to the right, what you got to do is remove those Rockefeller Republicans with a vengeance. You got to just absolutely hate them and you know, throw them out and you know, and stop on you know. Well, anyway, get rid
okay,
of them.
Okay, wait. Who's show notes that we're going to do first?
Well, wait, I'm not done. I've been hearing Rush Limbaugh saying, you know, it's actually the conservative talk radio, like Limbaugh and Hannity, are helping us, because they're saying vote for the most conservative candidate. Limbaugh and Hannity were behind Christine O'Donnell and Joe Miller, and they're attacking the rhinos, the Rockefeller Republicans. So they're, I don't, you know, I'm certainly skeptical about them, but they seem to be purists. They're not bad. They're, you know, they're not carrying water for the Rockefeller Republicans. And I think, you know, if they carried water for the Rockefeller Republicans, they would lose ratings and they would lose advertisers. You know, so, or for whatever reason, they're pulling the country to the right really hard. It's great.
Oh, it's astounding. And what I can't figure out is why the mollusk is unhappy about it, when it seems like he's been after this implicit white nationalism thing, and it's finally happening. Hunter Wallace.
Oh, okay.
Mollusk. Anyway, I think it's good for us, but...
Wait,
you know,
he's not unhappy about it, is he?
Yeah,
well,
no, he's
Well, he's
happy
like,
about
why
it.
Can't we do this for white nationalism? Just to, like, shut up and enjoy the show, you know?
Well, then he should be going to tea parties. See, us younger generation, we work too much. We don't have time to go out there and stand with a sign all day.
Yeah, I know. You're out there hoeing your rutabagas.
Yeah, and among other things. you know. But the people I see are mostly middle-aged, you know, retired, and that's good. You know, they're finally doing something useful instead of just going to Florida and playing golf.
Well, as you may know, I went to the Tea Party on April 15th in Daly Plaza in Chicago.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Not well. wearing an American flag shirt, which for some reason this American flag shirt always gets something always happens when I wear that shirt. It really brings out.
Did you borrow that shirt from Jeffrey M?
No, I didn't. Does he have one?
Yeah. There's a famous picture with him wearing one of those stupid shirts.
I went to the Tea Party rally. I was just walking around looking at it. I went with an acquaintance of mine who isn't political at all. And I was recognized by the Antifa, and they chased me out of there and, like, you know, put up flyers in my neighborhood subsequently about, like, how I'm horrible. But anyway, the Tea Party, that's not us. Those people are not us. But let's go to someone's notes.
Actually, you know what? I know one of the bigwigs in it. His wife bowls with my mom.
Really?
His name's Bob Schultz. He's got a profile on the SPLC. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've been trying so hard to get one of those. Okay.
He's the head of We the People, and he's got a real, like, hardcore organization going up there. But I mean, he's been a Tea Partier, you know, for 20 years. Right, and
okay.
Now all of a sudden...
You know what? I couldn't get an answer out of either of you, so I'm going with you, Kievsky. We're going to your show notes, and we're going to the first link. And we're going to talk about that, okay?
All right.
Michael Moore blames Iraq war on liberals in the New York Times.
Yes. All right. That's about the moral bankruptcy of the liberal establishment that has, you know, it has gatekeeped out intellectuals like us. I mean, there's a lot of...
Isn't it gate-kept?
Sure. Gate-kept. Right-wing populist right-wing intellectuals like myself, like, you know, Matt, like even Alex Linder, you know, and that's why we became very extreme.
What am I? Like, chopped liver here? Come on.
And you? Well, did you try to become a professor or something? I mean, did you try to become a professional intellectual in some way?
Yeah.
You know... Okay, so
I went to grad school. Does that count?
In for what degree?
Oh, you know what? I'm not the one on trial here, Mr. Kievsky.
Okay. Well, anyway, we've been getting the liberals. All right, they are only liberal until their ethnic interests are, and this is what Michael Moore doesn't say, but it's the elephant in the room, is that the reason the New York Times supported the Iraq War was because they're fake liberals, and actually what they truly are is Jewish ethnic activists. And that kind of, and you know, he doesn't say that, but that's the subtext of that article. You know, it's the sort of thing Kevin McDonald would have a field day with. So the liberal establishment are not true, they're not really principled leftists or liberals. That's just their moral facade, you know, to paint themselves as these morally superior people over the rest of us. But actually, they're just Jewish ethnic activists.
Right.
And the hangers-on who understand which side of their bread is buttered on.
Okay, so Michael Moore then goes on to write, or possibly this is previous, another editorial. If the Islamic Community Center isn't built, this is no longer America. Are we going to let the bullies and thugs win another one? We've got to turn this around and build the mosque on Ground Zero. Not two blocks away, but on it. That's what he says.
Yeah, it's like he writes at the level of a kindergarten teacher. And if you look at the comments on that article, they're hilarious. Because it's just a bunch of tut-tutting church lady type stuff that would never allow someone to come in and say, wait, do you know that Muslims, Islam is a religion of conquest. I mean, you know, you're feigning ignorance, or maybe you're being actively ignorant. I mean, you should respect the religion enough to understand what it really is about. It is a religion of conquest. It's not, you know, it's not Episcopalianism with turbans.
Right,
you know
well,
what I mean?
Well, Islam means submission. And what that means is, if I'm a Muslim, I submit to God completely, and then you, if you're not a Muslim, you submit to me completely.
Right. And they were actually going to build a Muslim community center in a rural town nearby. And
nearby
they were
having what?
Nearby me. In a neighboring town of mine.
Right. Just say, in rural Arizona, where you live.
In rural Connecticut, they were going to build an Islamic center. And I was, they were, you know, going to have a meeting, but they pulled out of it because there was so much negative response from the town. All right. But I was going to go, and if you ever have to question it, like an imam who's, you know, doing a public relations thing about why, Islam is a religion of peace and why he should build this community center here, you first of all, you can ask him a couple of trick questions. The first question is, do you consider America Dar al-Islam or Dar al-Harb, right? And if he says, I consider it Dar al-Islam, he's saying, I already consider it an Islamic state, right?
Right.
And if he says, I consider it Dar al-Harb, he says, that means it's the land of conflict, the land of war. And so they say, so you're saying America's the land of war, then, you know, because that's the definition, you know. And so either way, you got him. All right. And
Soren,
don't interrupt me. I'm not done. So the thing about Muslims is, and the second thing you ask them is, can you tell us what taqiyya is and do you practice taqiyya? And isn't it true that 9/10 of Islam, 9/10 of religion is taqiyya? Now, taqiyya is dissimulation or lying. So if he says, no, I don't practice taqiyya, say, well, how do we know? You know, because if you're practicing taqiyya,
You have to say you weren't.
Yeah. Right. So you
I wasn't trying to cut you off, Kevsky. I just wanted to No, I just wanted to make a joke and like keep going. I just wanted to say, go talk to an imam. I can't go talk to an imam. I don't even talk to my own mom.
Okay. All right. So you can trap them by knowing a little bit about the religion. It's pretty interesting. I mean, you got have a healthy respect for Islam. I don't want to live under it, you know. And we are going to have to come up with something against it. But the point is, Michael Moore, like liberals, all right, here's an example of what Michael Moore is doing. Back in 1979, they said, oh, we got to give Zimbabwe to the blacks. So it's unjust without it. And the Afrikaners were saying, if you do it, everything's going to go to hell. You know, everyone's going to be poor. We're all going to be miserable. And the liberals said, no, it's an affront to black people. Oh! And so they got their black democracy. They got Mugabe. And 30 years later, what do you do? The liberals won, and Zimbabwe is hell. And
so
liberals, they shoot first and ask questions later. They do the destructive thing. They don't care, apparently, that it's going to do. And, you know, if you tell them, look, this is going to destroy things. They don't care. And we'll all be living under Sharia law, you know.
And that's what liberals do. And you know what conservatives do?
What?
And conservatives always like, you know, compromise the battles and lose the war.
Well, apparently that's changing right now with this Tea Party thing.
The logical conclusion to a defensive war is surrender, as Napoleon told us.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, conservatives are about being defensive. So I don't know if you want revolution. Maybe revolutionary conservatism is different. But
what I want is for us to become a mind-weaponized collective like the Jews and the Muslims. And only then, because until now, in all of history, until now, hot lead and cold steel has worked. We are now at a crossroads in the history of the white race that we have never hit. In our whole history, since time immemorial, we have always solved our problems with hot lead and cold steel. It always worked, and now we have to use the mind weapons that the Semitics are using on us.
Yes.
And if we don't do that, we won't win.
That's true.
So, that's all.
You know, I think this insight you have is tremendously valuable, and you know, the more you can take the Tony Robbins stuff out of it, you know, the better. Because
why?
I think I don't like the game stuff, you know, the NLP for picking up chicks and stuff. I just have an aversion to that stuff, but
well,
I take your mind weapon stuff seriously.
Well, just because you do doesn't mean, you know, that the vast audiences that we need to appeal to.
Right. No, you're right, Kievsky, and maybe this is something I need to get over, because I there's another community that I ignored for the longest time, which was the troll community. And if you listen, I don't know if you heard my interview with Weave a few months ago, but I realized just in the last half year that I was wrong to ignore the trolls, just because I'm personally offended by everything they say, you know?
Okay.
I was actually wrong. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong on this stuff about game and hypnosis and stuff. Well,
Soren, if I can interrupt for just a moment.
Please, we haven't heard from you.
Yeah, I've been listening. You have to separate the techniques and the tactics from the goals. If you use game to catch herpes and die alone, then yeah, it's a decadent, degenerate thing. But if you use these tools that work, if you are just sharp about how you engage other people, that's critical. Personal relationships, interhuman relationships, it's something that we need to work on as far as with leadership, with persuasion,
not my personal strong point, although I'm pretty good on family life, but you know, the romance thing, it's like basically the smaller apart picking up women takes in my life, the smaller apart it has in my life, the happier that my wife is, you know what I'm saying?
Well, we can't all be as handsome as you, Soren. Some of us have to work at it. Some of us need these tools.
Well, if you phrase it that way, it kind of plays into my whole thing, doesn't it? Okay, shall we go to Kievsky's last link? America needs Muslims?
Okay, we went with that one. America needs... Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Joshua Holland, the same thing. That's the Zimbabwe thing. You know, wanting to Islamify America was like, you know, turning Rhodesia into Zimbabwe. The liberals shoot first and ask questions later. They push their policy through, you know, and they don't, and it predictably causes massive destruction. And do we hold them responsible? I mean, can we get reparations for the Rhodesians who lost their farms and got murdered? I'd like to confiscate the wealth of, you know, of the liberals who advocated to give Rhodesia to the Africans. I'd like to go back in the newspaper archives and find every liberal who wrote in favor of that and go confiscate the wealth of his family and to the third generation. You know, the liberals, man, they're just going to keep doing this to us and keep doing this to us and keep doing this to us until the third generation.
Well, interesting you bring up generations, because in fact there are genetic roots to political behavior and to being liberal or not being a liberal and not being liberal. It has something to do with innate disposition, and it has something to do with genetics. And in fact, you know, this is part of our struggle that we probably don't talk about much, and we maybe shouldn't talk about at all, but eventually we'll have to get rid of the gene for liberalism.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Hold up. I think it's important to note that Western liberalism, like everything else, has been perverted by the invasive elite.
The Jewish oligarchy. Okay, right. So let me argue.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right. Let me argue to keep that gene. It would be fine if there were no enemy. If we weren't forced to live among the enemy, those genes would actually make us treat each other more nicely.
Well, they would find another gene. It's like Christianity. Christianity's been hijacked. Do we get rid of Christianity? Science. Science has clearly, over the last 100 years, been hijacked for their ethnic interests. Do we get rid of science?
Good point. We have to become the virulent strain. We have to become like a bacteria that is no longer... it's what do you call it? The antibiotic is no longer effective on that bacteria.
Yeah, right. Drug resistance.
Drug resistance. Yeah, you know what? That's my other favorite metaphor too.
Right. And the interesting thing about bacteria is they do something that that higher organisms don't do, which is different. Bacteria, even sometimes different species of bacteria, but bacteria pass fragments of DNA around among each other.
That was just released in the last couple of weeks, wasn't it?
No, it's been known for long. It's been known for probably 50 years. I mean, it's been known for a long time.
Oh, okay. There's some new story about it.
Yeah. Do you want to hear the clip about that? Because I use this metaphor all the time. And there's this...
No, we have to go easy on the metaphors just for the audience. Can we go to the show notes of Mr. Parrott now? Mr. Parrott, take us away.
Okay. My first article is Patients' Rights versus Caregivers' Civil Rights. And this is a story that comes right here from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I live. And apparently a patient up until now has actually had the permission to had a wide-ranging ability through a patient's Bill of Rights to make determinations like they don't want a male nurse or they don't want a black doctor and things like that. And that's gone on for decades without incident. But an elderly woman here in Indianapolis fell on the floor, and a black woman saw this, and she knew about her situation, and she used that as standing for a civil rights case in which she demanded the right to deny this elderly woman in the nursing home the right to refuse care from her. And I just found this really amusing because it's sort of the watching the civil rights movement win these last victories where they finally get to I'm sure Martin Luther King would be proud to know this.
Right,
this
the court said that nursing home residents have the right to choose their caregivers unless those choices are based on color.
Right,
and you know, of course, a lot of times people have lived like politically correct, liberal lives, but then when the Alzheimer's kicks in, they're like, okay, I don't want a black woman picking me up.
Yep. Well,
right. And a lot of these very elderly people are from communities and stuff where, they have a lot of the same positions we have. They're from generations that haven't been brainwashed to be frightened by the idea.
Well, even if they were brainwashed, they've forgotten the brainwashing now.
Exactly, yeah, you're correct about that. But this woman is a true 21st century civil rights activist. She has successfully overturned the patient's Bill of Rights because black people's feelings are more important than the wishes of the dying and elderly. That's just to be assumed under our current regime. And the case has just been won in Indiana, but from all legal scholarly perspectives, it looks like it's going to ripple throughout the entire nation and be another glorious civil rights victory.
Yep. Well, you know, when you're really old and you only have a few years left to live, I mean, why not go out in a blaze of glory? You know what I mean? For your race.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying anything specific, but geez, you know, if I was 80 years old, and, I don't know. I'll stop right there.
Okay, so second link. Oh, this is still patients' rights. Okay.
Yeah, it's the same one.
Okay. The Dream Act.
Yeah, this one is entitled John McCain Loses Marbles, Promises to Block Dream Act. And what this is actually about is... John McCain was originally a co-sponsor of the Dream Act.
Now, wait a sec. The Dream Act just got added to the defense bill by Harry Reid, right?
Yes. Yes, this is about this. What's amusing is that the Dream Act has been around since, like, I believe 2003. It's been around forever.
Right. So this is the act that says,
yeah,
if you're an illegal alien and you're a young person who's in college and your parents dragged you here when you were little, what the heck? We'll ignore the fact that you're illegal anyway.
Not exactly. That's how they spin it, but the legislation is written so sloppily, intentionally, that anybody of any age, there's I believe there's a cap at 35. In the latest bill, the one going through the Senate, can qualify for this.
But you have to come here when you were before 16 or something, right?
You have to have claimed to have come here.
Right.
And that's what's beautiful about it. It's sort of an amnesty where they just kind of trust these people who are already on record as having gamed the immigration system. You just kind of trust them to not game it again.
So anyway, Reid added it to the defense bill.
Yeah.
And McCain has been throwing tantrums about it, even though he used to support it.
Right, and that's how far the political spectrum has shifted, and this is very encouraging for me. I watched the 2007 election very closely, and I've watched McCain's career very closely, and to see him get drugged this far on this issue is such a promising development for our cause, that people have become more aware of this issue. People are no longer falling for a lot of the liberal platitudes. It's of course not as far as we'd like, but these are the kinds of developments in the correct direction that we want, where people Lindsey Graham, who is the immigration antichrist with a lot of this stuff, is now actually advocating against birthright citizenship and such.
Okay, so
you know what this tells me is that we could possibly have a bloodless revolution. And, I mean, that's a very good thing, because I would much rather pull this off without violence. Because if we were fanatic enough and there was enough of us, if we become a mind-weaponized collective, we can simply bend these politicians to our will. Like, you know, like when you're bending a nail with your hands once you heat it up.
Ah, there is no nail.
What do you mean? Did you know you can bend a nail with your hand?
No,
just hold it in your hand long enough, and you.
I was doing a thing, you know, from The Matrix. There is no spoon.
Sorry, missed the reference.
Yeah,
but the point is, we can. There is certainly a possibility of bending the politicians. They're not a monolith that's just going to do Soros's bidding. You know, it's possible for the people to make the politicians go in the direction we want them to go. The reason they're doing the stuff we don't want is just because of the manufactured consent. Because we are not weaponized minds. And when are weaponized minds, we will be able to...
That was a mind weapon move. Do you hear what you just said, Kievsky? You just used the word manufacture of consent. Do you know who came up with that, who originated that term?
Yeah, Noam Chomsky.
Right. Aha. So we're turning the weapon of the enemy against him.
Now, I agree to an extent with Kievsky, but you have to remember that we're winning this in the legislative... in the legislative aspect of this battle, but as soon as we win it there, they'll just shift it to the executive, and you're already saying that with Obama making it to where you only arrest illegal immigrants who have committed a violent crime, and it could also end up in the judicial system completely away from the American people, and that's where a lot of the civil rights, that's where a lot of the liberal agenda has come from, whenever they can't manufacture consent among the actual electorate.
Well, eventually we can bend all of them.
Right, yeah. And I want to add...
This is what I like. Faith and optimism, even to the degree of being like psychotic and unrealistic, which, you know, maybe it is, but nevertheless, it's still necessary. If you want to win, you have to be optimistic. That's actually what's behind my infamous slogan.
Well, I think that we're going to have the equivalent of the founding of Islam for, you know, white nationalists.
That's what we need. That's what we need. Do you remember my infamous slogan, Mr. Kievsky?
Your what slogan?
Infamous slogan.
Billions will die, we will win.
Billions will die, we will win, which is nothing but a restatement of Gramsci's pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. Right?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
But if you want to start up something like the founding of Islam, then you have to start with something very simple. You can't, you know, the complications in religions accrete later after the founding.
No, I know.
Start
That's
with something
it's
simple.
It's all about NLP and saying to young white men, don't you think you should get those hot blonde girls instead of those Negroes? Simple as that. Seeing a good-looking white girl with a Negro is a punch in the gut to any self-respecting young white man.
What do you want to win, Kievsky?
And so that's that is how you can influence. When once we have the ears of young white men, that is how we influence them.
Do you want to win, Kievsky?
Yes, it's the only thing that matters, and I'll do literally anything to win. Remember,
take my slogans and weaponize them.
With billions will die. What other slogans do you have?
I worked on this one for a long time. Rise against the enemies of God.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. What isn't that a Muslim saying?
No, there's a well. In the gospel, there is a place where. Or maybe it's one of the letters of Paul, and then Saint Theodosius has a longer quote. But there's a. Let's see. Fight against. Try to live in peace with your friends and also with your enemies, but only your own personal enemies and not the enemies of God. That's okay. An old quote from Russian. But the thing about living in peace with your friends, I thought that was dispensable for a slogan. We can just take it as granted. Right?
Yep.
Rise against the enemies of God. Nothing about who they are, nothing about what rising means, just that. Rise against the enemies of God. Make it that simple.
Yes.
Rise against the enemies of God. Nothing about who we are, nothing about who they are, just rise against the enemies of God. Yeah. That's
absolutely
what we need.
Now,
that's
how does saying that billions will die, how's that good? Marketing.
Unlike Kievsky and myself,
it
Matt,
seems
you,
like a,
you have absolutely no anti-cornucopian fibers in the depths of your soul, so you don't understand.
I don't want billions to die. That sounds really mean.
Well, yeah, it might be a Takiya thing. I'm not going to go around saying that. Admittedly, that goes against Takiya. That's sort of like for the 33rd degree. That's not for the porch masons to hear.
Okay, can they hear "Rise Against the Enemies of God"?
Sure. You know, one of our problems is this idea that that it's uncool to be a fanatic, and that it's cool to be an atheist and skeptical of everything and scoffing
lukewarm.
At everything. Lukewarm, right?
A smartass.
Lukewarm.
Right.
Neither hot nor cold, but fit to being spit out of the mouth of God.
Yes, and those are the people, and we are, they are being spit out of the mouth of God. It's a bunch of losers.
I've been listening this past year to talk radio, and I think yesterday morning I was listening to Big John Howell and Amy Jacobson on WIND here in Chicago, and they're pretty amusing. And they're conservative. And John Howell said something. He said, well, I'm a conservative, but I see myself as pretty much in the middle, about 12 o'clock. You get too far right, too far left, either direction around the clock, you get to like 6 o'clock, you get to the real radical. So this idea of the extreme right and extreme left turn out to be the same thing. But then he said, those people feel, I think, that's why I'm a moderate. And... I'm not, super emotional. And
right.
I don't know about everybody in our movement, but I'm certainly not distinguished for being an extremely emotional person. And I don't think I hold my beliefs because of anger. I don't think the anger is necessary. I mean, if it's...
Yeah, it is. So,
I'm saying it doesn't have to start with anger. The important thing is the victory. The emotions that accompany the victory don't matter except insofar as they're necessary for bringing out the victory.
Well, you know what? I mean, I think...
So if you can have children, if you can have and raise children without love, that's okay. It works better with love. But I'm saying the love is secondary, right? The purpose...
I think it's quite fine to cultivate. I think it's quite fine to cultivate a fanatical hate as long as you can control it. Kind of like controlling...
To cultivate fanatical hate, but
right.
That's not,
but you gotta
that's
control
not what you start
it.
With.
You got to control it like you control a nuclear reaction in a
Right, but you didn't end up with your politics, Kievsky, because you're an angry person.
How do you know? I lived in Boston, and I saw that non-whites were taking up prime real estate and not working at all. I saw, you know, 14-year-old white girls having their lives ruined. And, you know, and when they say, oh, yeah, we're hateful, to some degree, that's true. But you know what? It's some things should be hated.
Yeah.
And the thing is, dumb people aren't, or, you know, let people who are not weaponized spend their hate on stupid stuff. They, you know, they wear insignia or they go commit a crime. They do stupid stuff. But what jihad is you take that fanatical hate and you use it as like a nuclear power plant in your chest. You know, you use it to motivate you every day to be fanatical, and you practice taqiyya among your community. You practice taqiyya. You hide your true views among, you know, the people who don't believe as you do. And you end up, you and your community look at everyone around you as a bunch of infidels. I mean, it's just like Islam, you know, the same psychological mechanism as Islam. That's what we have to use without, you know, becoming Muslims. But it's the same psychological mechanisms. Look up, get the book, the Mukaddima, and skip the long, wordy introduction and start reading where it says the Bedouins are a natural group in civilization or a natural group in society. And that will kind of give you the idea. Look up taqiyya. Look up jihad.
No, I've read about taqiyya.
Asabiya.
I got a question for you. The 19 September 11 hijackers.
Yeah.
They were led by one guy who was an engineer, and a lot of these terrorist leaders are engineering students. But I don't think they were that bright. I've never even thought about this or seen it discussed. What were their IQs? The 19.
I don't know. Probably in the low hundreds. Like I'd say between 110 and 130. No, 110 and 140.
Maybe the leaders, but all 19 of them?
Well,
I mean, when the Arab average is like down below 90,
it's flat, though. The curve's very flat. There are a lot of smart Arabs.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I've met them.
Okay. What I'm saying is, we've got better people than they do.
Right. So when we have their mind weaponization mechanisms, we will be able to kick ass big time without any violence.
Well, you know, with or without violence, and you know, I'm willing to leave that to the future. But you sold me. What do you think, Matt?
This idea.
Doesn't sound very hoosier.
I agree with a lot of Bukowski's saying. I have to say that I really began this as coming from the opposite side, as far as just an extension of love for my family and really reflecting on what needs to be done in order to protect that family. And yes, you absolutely do hate the things that are threatening them, and victory is the only thing that matters. And I agree with those points. But I guess it just seems awkward and unnecessary to sell it from that perspective. I agree in isolation with what's being said, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that
sell it. It's hard to give away.
is that it's. We really have to remind ourselves about the spirit of stewardship. It's not just about defeating the enemy. It's about defending everything we love, whether it's our culture, whether it's our art, whether it's our children, our nieces and nephews, just the world around us. I think if people really realized just how much of what they loved was at stake, I mean, hate is obviously the inverse of that. Hating those who threaten what you love. But I guess I would flip it over and look at it the other way if I had my druthers. And I think this billions will die thing is sort of a creepy tangential thing that really has nothing to do with the struggle.
Yeah, you know what you have to do, you always have to go to people where they're at. And that's why the NLP stuff is the thing to do. Everybody is in a trance, and it's your job to hijack their trance in your direction. That's all. That's It's like being a Trojan horse in a computer. They you identify their trance, you pace their experience, and then you use weasel phrases so that you're not talking directly to them, and then you use embedded commands. I mean, to imagine this scenario, Soren.
Yes.
If I were to ask you to imagine.
Wait, you're doing it to me right now, aren't you? You're
right.
Controlling my mind.
Well, attempting to, but you caught me. But that's good. That's an example of it. When you ask somebody to imagine something, you know, it's basically what you do. But you have to pace their experience. You know, if they're really angry, you know, you got to act angry too, or say, I see that you're angry, you know. So you have to mirror their emotional state. It's very good stuff, you know, and it's not, even if you study the speed seduction stuff, it applies to any goal.
Now I want to ask you, Kievsky. You read my blog post over at delightsup.wordpress.com, the mailbag standing up to evil, this back and forth I've had with this high school kid who emailed me.
Yes, that was a high school kid, huh? Okay.
Yeah, it turned out to be a high school kid in a later, I updated the correspondence. But I guess my point, I'm asking you, now in this correspondence, I don't engage in Takiya at all. I very directly, and maybe, how would you have engaged that differently? Because I believe our message, if approached from the right direction and with the right rejoinders and the right spirit and attitude and angle, I think our message, without being deceptive or engaging in Takiya, I'm not against that on principle. I understand that in some contexts it's necessary to hide what you truly believe. I do that on a daily basis when I go shopping and stuff. I don't just walk around all day holding these views on my shoulder.
Right.
But
like
do you
parrot.
Think that... Yes, like a parrot. Do you think that this was
like
too direct? That you could have...
No, your reply to that person was excellent. And see, the thing is, that it was in that context that he asked you. If someone came up and debated me, obviously, I would probably go to your blog and I would use your talking points, because you did it exquisitely well, way better than I'm able to. I mean, you're up the level of Jared Taylor. You're the only one I know who's as good as Jared Taylor at that, you know, or almost as good. I mean, he's really, he's the one to study.
He can do it on his feet. I had to type it out and stare off into space like a cow and think of these things, whereas he can just one after another.
Yeah.
See, I would never be able to come up with that stuff. Do you know why? Because I would never be in that conversation. I would never talk to someone like that. I just never would.
Well,
I don't have those kind of discussions.
You got to go to people where they're at, you know. And the thing is, what you can do is you can use all right. Instead of saying, like, you can use code words like welfare recipients. That's how I do it. You know, I can't stand the welfare recipients. And what I'm really describing, you know, non-whites. But I just say welfare recipients, and it doesn't blip the radar. It doesn't, you know, trip the alarms.
Right.
At least not as much, you know. And that works quite well around the community.
But the other
argument
is, Birch Society has been doing for decades, though, isn't it?
The other argument is, see, this is Svigor has this argument, you know, for why you should always try to be very gentle in initiating people into white nationalist thinking. Because his theory is, it's a slippery slope. Once you get them started, they'll end up at the same position everyone else is at anyway. But then there's Alex Linder's position, and Alex says, no, use the words, use the harshness, because that has its own effects on the discourse, because it gets people used to hearing, you know, nigger, Jew, you know, fight against the Jews.
And I think when you approach it from a position of impotent rage, people who are the kind of healthy, motivated, positive-minded, focused people we need aren't attracted to that. It just attracts more people with frothing impotent rage.
Right. Right.
Well, that's back to my point. Have you ever seen me froth?
I think on some of the Skype video chat, I think I have seen you froth. Maybe it was just in the
That's just because of the palsy.
Oh, is that the beard? Maybe that was your beard.
You know what? This is degenerating. Okay, I would like to do more shows. And
yes,
I learned from listening to Goyfire that what people really, really want is regular shows. If we
right.
do a show every week with a rotating cast of people, it doesn't have to be me every week. But the point is, if we could put out a weekly show, this would be so big. People would love
be rich. Yep.
Yeah. And Matt and I have talked about it, but it hasn't happened. But I'm going to go, I'm going to edit this and put it up tomorrow. It's too late tonight. By edit, I mean I'm going to put on an intro and, like, upload it. I don't micro-edit. It's too difficult to listen through the whole thing and, like, try to, like, so let's do an out, okay? Kievsky, Matt Parrott, I thought it was a good show tonight, and I hope that our little fans out there in Radioland are having a wonderful time with popcorn and ice cream, snuggling up next to the hi-fi, listening to us.
Okay, thank you very much, Soren.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and I appreciate an opportunity to share some of my ideas with everybody, and I look forward to doing this again.